there is something particularly poignant, there is something particularly powerful about one's last words. When one summons their last ounce of energy, when they breathe their very last, they're not going to waste their words with mere prattle. They're going to say what matters most to them. And sometimes those words come out with a trace of wit. Sometimes they're rather philosophical. Sometimes they cut right to the heart. They tell me when James Rogers was about to be executed by a firing squad back in the Utah days of 1960, they asked him, "Do you have a last request?" And he said, "Why, yes, I do. I want you to give me a bulletproof vest." When Karl Marx was lying on his deathbed, his housekeeper came in and he said, "Do you have a last message to give to the world?" And he turned to her and he said, "Go on, get out. Last words are for fools who haven't said enough already." Then there were the philosophical lines of W. Somerset Maugham, the well-noted British writer, who said, "Dying is a dull and dreary affair, and my advice to you is, have nothing to do with it." Many of us are familiar with the last words of George Gipp to his football teammate, Newt Rockne, when he said, "One day when the going is tough and the big game is hanging in the balance, ask the team to win one for the Gipper." Famous last words. But those famous last words are not only shared verbally, they are also etched in stone. Those pithy, cogent epithets found on people's gravestones. I like this one found in an Oxfordshire cemetery in England. "Here lies one for whom medicine would not give a little gold, and so his life he lost. I fancy he'd wish to live again if he only knew how much his funeral cost." And pity the person buried under this tombstone. "Here lies the body of William Smith, and what is somewhat rarish, he was born, bred, and hanged in this very parish." Famous last words. And when you come to the last words of Jesus as he's hanging there on Calvary's cross, there's nothing trite, there's nothing trivial about the whole thing. They are words that cut right to the core of things, right to the heart. And as you study the gospel accounts, there are seven of these words, seven expressions. And the first of these is shared in the most horrific circumstances that could be possible. It was a beautiful spring day. There was still a lingering trace of cool in the air. The wildflowers and the grasses bobbed in the breeze. Fluffy white clouds scudded through the sky. And off in the marble halls of the Supreme Court, every vestige of justice had just been thrown to the wind. The spotless Lamb of God was scrutinized and found to be wanting. The Holy Righteous One had been shuffled from one kangaroo court to another and condemned. A heavy cross was dropped on his shoulders, and as he dragged it down the Via Dolorosa, every mean, vile, hateful word that demons could summon was hurled in his face. There on the summit of the hill, the execution rites began. The two thieves who were to flank Jesus on either side were stripped of their clothing. They were wrestled to their crosses by burly soldiers, who took those rusty spikes and drove them through flesh and muscles, tendons, nerves, and veins. The pain was absolutely so excruciating that they screamed out their profanities. It was so painful that Cicero, the noted journalist of antiquity, tells us that crucifixion victims often became raving madmen before they were mercifully released by death. Sometimes the scene at the crosses would get so bad that people would scramble up a ladder with a knife and they cut the tongue out of the crucifixion victim just so they could get some peace and quiet. When Jesus' turn came, there was no fight, no resistance, no ugly words. And when that final nail was driven through his flesh, they took that cross and they hoisted it heavenward and heaved it into the hole that was prepared for it. As the midday sun beat down upon him, beads of perspiration dotted his brow. The blood dripped from his gaping wounds. His heart broke with the weight of our sin. And that it was in that moment that Jesus summoned his last ounce of energy to say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Famous last words. These are words that have the ability to reach to the generations and take us by the heart, because these are the words that speak of his love for us, his mercy to us as fallen human sinners. These are words that have the ability to reach us, because even today we are driving the nails through his flesh with the nail blows of our rebellion. Still today we spit in his face with our arrogance and our sloppy excuses. And we break our heart, break his heart with our wanton ways. And still he reaches out to us to say, "I love you. I forgive you." That is good news for us today, because every one of us has chapters in our life history where the only thing left for us to do is to hang our heads in shame. All of us have those nagging, persistent habits that we just can't seem to shake off. All of us are miserable failures and have failed to come up to the glory of God. And still Jesus says to us today, "I love you. I forgive you." That is a love that is enough to stop us dead in our tracks, turn us around, and send us running for home. That is a love that has the power to lift the guilt off our shoulders and set us free. That is a love that invites us to come into a relationship with Jesus each day, where we can experience his grace, his love, his freedom, his victory in our lives. And so today, we are going to celebrate that amazing love. We will celebrate it as we gather together to wash each other's feet. And as we gather at the table to partake of the emblems of Christ's gift to us from Calvary's cross. And so I say, let us take the last words of Jesus and let them become the first words in our new life in him. Father, forgive them. And in that forgiveness, we have a new life. At this time, we're going to separate to wash each other's feet. The gentlemen will be meeting in the room immediately behind us here, the junior room. The ladies in the primary Sabbath school room, and off in the multi-purpose room, we'll have a place where families can wash each other's feet. And then we'll come back into the sanctuary to celebrate the Lord's Supper. Please, let us come together as family, as friends. Let us come together as fellow pilgrims in this journey of grace that Jesus offers to us today.